Recency bias, as well as the big pod, the Montreal bias, coming up on the tail end of this. Yes, synergy. I'm Zach Vanoss, along with you here, and yes, the big pod, Sean and I, will be immediately following this morning after mini pod, in which I recap a 4-3 shootout win, your Montreal Canadiens, over the visiting Pittsburgh Penguins. The Habs have now beat the Pens twice inside of a week. Thomas Tatar with a pair in this one, Brendan Gallagher scoring as well, while Paul Byron and Joe Drouin scored for the Canadiens in the shootout. It was a fun one without Carey Price, who was out with some sort of illness. I don't care how we could title it, to be totally honest with you. It was a fun one in which Montreal trailed 2-0 after one period, and we were all tied up 3-3 after 40 minutes, and the Canadiens would go on to win in the shootout. Still, it took the Habs some doing to get going, as they came out a little bit lacking, which led to the 2-0 deficit after one period. Antti Niemi's beat on the first shot that he would face. Everybody was beat on Chris Letang's the second of the period. But Thomas Tatar would score 11 seconds into the second period. Gallagher doing a lot of work on that one before he eventually then gets his own, as the Habs outshoot Pittsburgh 19-4 in the second period, scoring all three of their goals in that one. Thomas Tatar, second of the night, coming on the power play for the Canadiens. One in which they, I think, thought they had the win. Victor Mete thought he had his first, but Andrew Shaw, absolutely, definitely, no doubt about it, interfered with the goalie, likely on purpose. Victor Mete's winning goal gets called back, and the Canadiens and Pens, they go into overtime, where the Habs do have a power play in the overtime, but it seems to kill all momentum. Not a lot going on with that. And so we found ourselves walking towards a shootout. Antti Niemi, the Niemi man, he managed to stop both Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, while, as I mentioned, Paul Byron and Joe Drouin doing the work in the shootout. Both of them finding the back of the net, the Canadiens. 4-3 winners. It was a fun one on Saturday night. It really was. Kind of game that, not perfect by the Canadiens by any stretch of the imagination. They say it took a minute or two for things to, 20 minutes, I would say, for the Canadiens to really get into this one. 20 minutes and 11 seconds, if you're keeping track at home. But there were points in the game. You looked up at the shot clock. Canadiens absolutely dominated, specifically in that second period. They continued to push it against Pittsburgh. It was another game that outside the first, I mean, not all 60 minutes of it were perfect, but outside the first, the Canadiens, I think for the most part, once again, decided to take the much more talented Pittsburgh Penguins and really take the game to them. It was great to see. You continue, what I find so fun right now is moments of the power play or just big moments in overtime. There's be a second there where I think, oh man, great that Claude Julien is really, you know, trusting the kids and empowering the kids and letting the young guys get out there and do their thing. And then you realize, well, he has to. That's pretty much all there is. It's a very youthful team, and that makes it a lot of fun to watch. Yes, the old man, Thomas Plekanec, got in on the action on Saturday night. But other than that, the youthful bunch out there who just seem to be pushing it. They don't seem to care that it's the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're ready to go. They're going to give them a challenge every night. And some nights they're going to manage to get a 4-3 shootout win. Other nights we're going to see what we saw earlier this week, where they score nothing against the LA Kings. This is nothing you don't know, though the season's going to have ups and downs. But an entertaining Saturday night is about all you can ask for, isn't it? That's how I see it. You just get a good win on a Saturday night, one that had its back and forth. As I say, the Canadiens did lead 3-2 at one point, 3-3 after 40. When all said and done, all the fans at the Bell Center get to go home happy. Other scores from around the NHL on Saturday night. The Edmonton Oilers, they beat the New York Rangers by a 2-1 score. The Vegas Golden Knights, they shut out the Philadelphia Flyers, Gritty's team, 1-0. 5-1 Ottawa all over LA. Ottawa off to a decent start for a team that was supposed to be horrible. They probably still will be. Boston pounds on Detroit 8-2. The Red Wings coming into Montreal on Monday night. Carolina overtime winners against the Minnesota Wild. Columbus falls badly to Tampa Bay, 8-2 the score in that one. Vancouver beats Florida, 3-2. Toronto doubles up on Washington. Toronto did not score 5 goals in this game. They only scored 4. 4-2 the score there. Nashville, though, they managed to score 5. They beat the Islanders by a 5-2 score. Dallas scoring 5 against Anaheim, 5-3 the final there. Overtime between Chicago and St. Louis. Saw the Blackhawks winning that one 4-3. 3-0 Buffalo blanks Arizona. And overtime between Calgary and Colorado. Saw the Flames win that one 3-2. Lots of extra time on Saturday night across the NHL. Speaking of extra time, there's extra pod, about an hour of it. Sean and I coming up right after this with the Montreal Bias. We're doing a media draft. Yes, our annual, sort of annual, almost annual, Habs media draft. Shake things up. We only draft 10. It's not, we don't belabor the point. Anyways, you'll hear all about it starting right about now. And now, the big pod, the Montreal Bias. Zach's still with you, but joined now by Sean O'Neill. See what I'm doing, Sean, is I'm piggybacking this on the end of the recency bias when I put it up after the Penguins-Habs game on Saturday night.
It's all about brand synergy.
Exactly.
I've been telling you that for years.
I know you have. But finally, I bothered to look up what synergy meant, and it turns out... It is not simply a hockey stick. It is about bringing the brands together. So that's what we're doing here. Plus, this way there'll be something relevant from post-Penguins game on Saturday night. Because we are recording this before the Pens and Habs play game number 4 on the season.
Yeah, and the first 3 games have been okay.
Yeah, I think they've been... It all depends by how you're measuring it. But I've personally been measuring it now by... Let's see what the kids got, and Let's see what kind of hockey we're gonna see. It's been really good. I mean, 1-1-1 it's not over the moon, but they started on the road. Yes, they dropped their first game at home, 3-0 the Kings, and we'll see what happens Saturday night. I'm sure that'll dictate the way we continue to talk about the team. But I'm watching for different reasons, so losses don't really sting, and they haven't embarrassed themselves yet.
Yeah.
So all good, you know.
Yeah, and they've been fun. Like, last year, they sucked, and they were boring. There's nothing worse than when your team is terrible, and they're also just not fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
At least this year, through three games, it's an incredibly small sample size, but at least they're kind of fun to watch this year. I still don't think they're going to be very good. I think they've kind of overachieved in that first week. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but at least they're faster, and they're skating, and they're kind of fun to watch.
But when you say
last year was such a slog.
When you say getting ahead of themselves, like against what? Because I do feel like everybody, everyone's been positive about the first 3 games. I don't think anyone's fooling themselves into thinking this is maybe a bubble team on the high end. But I don't think anyone's talking to themselves when we get the next Vegas Golden Knights on our hands.
That's probably fair. At least reasonable people aren't. I mean, There was some chest puffing going up after the first 2 games, which I found mildly fascinating. But I think everyone's expectations are tempered, and rightfully so.
They have to be.
Yeah, they have to be. I mean, again, is it good for the team if they kind of overachieve and you know, finish 9th in the East? Like, arguably not.
No.
But at the same time, like, you know, these guys they're not just going to roll over. Like, you got to roll that team out there. And sometimes, you know, last year a single bounce didn't go their way. And, you know, sometimes the bounces do go their way. Like, this isn't a very good team, but it wouldn't shock me if they're, like you said, sort of a quasi bubble team.
They're pluckier.
Which, if you're really rebuilding, which I'm still not entirely sure if that's what the team's doing or not, if you're really going through a rebuild, that's not ideal, but we'll see. It's been a week.
Yeah, it's been a week. And we saw it in the LA Kings game. There's going to be nights when they just don't score goals because this team seriously lacks goal scorers.
Yeah.
But we haven't, forget the first 3 games of the season, we haven't spoken, you and I, on the big pod, on the Montreal Bias, in some time now. A lot has happened in that time. For one, college boy went off to become a college man in Las Vegas.
And the return, I got to give Bergevin credit. The return's pretty decent, I would say.
I would say so. Yeah, I think so. I don't know that you could get a ton more for Max Pacioretty coming off the season that he did just have. You got to keep that in mind.
Yep, that's fair. And I mean, especially considering what Carolina got for Skinner, I really thought that was going to, that was kind of the market. And, you know, I really braced myself for the Habs getting a second round pick and sort of a middling prospect that wouldn't turn into anything. To get Tatar and Suzuki, you know, Tatar, whatever, we'll see if he's got much left in the tank or not. But Suzuki, from everything I read and from everything I've seen, seems like a real nice piece.
Yeah, for our third best center prospect. He's a center, right? I'm not wrong about that.
Yeah, for now, at least.
Okay. Well, still, so that puts him, you know, goes Kotkaniemi, Polig, and then Suzuki. That's much better than we were 9 months ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's good. It's a start. It's something.
It's a start. Yeah, it's a start.
Which is where we are.
It's more, I mean, it's more center depth they've had in, I don't know, at least 10 years.
I would say so. It's a start sounds like a good name for this podcast, too.
Yeah.
Not hilarious or immature, unfortunately. But we may stumble on something yet. A little housekeeping. We're going to be doing our Habs media draft again, though not quite as extensive as last time.
Second annual.
Exactly. I mean, it's what the kids come for. So we're going to be doing that a little bit later in the podcast. We'll finish with the Habs media. But this one, we're just going to bang out. We're each going to draft five. So our top 10, essentially the media that if you were reduced to only picking with your first overall pick is, I guess, technically, if you could only listen to one person and this other one's off the table, who would it be? And so we're going to bring in newspaper, radio, and online, basically all the big voices, at least by our opinion, all the voices who are kind of shaping the overall media conversation around the Canadians most of the time. So we'll be doing that later. But first, I did want to get into some of the things that have happened since we last potted and did our whole Would You Trade Places With Them podcast across the NHL. Canadians off to an okay start. I think not a negative start is one way to put it. College boy out. Are you going to miss him?
Yeah, now that he's gone, yeah. After shitting all over him for the past 3 years, now that he's gone, I probably will. I think it was time. Like, I think everyone needed to move on from that situation. It was just, it had kind of reached the point where, kind of like Kessel in Toronto, it was time to move on for everyone. Listen, he was, I will always say this, he was spectacularly ill-suited to be the captain to a degree that I've never seen in Montreal and maybe across the league. He was a very bad captain, but he was a very good goal scorer. He's probably the best Habs goal scorer of my lifetime.
Once again, our conversation, kind of the fulcrum point is the sliding doors moment of him being given the captaincy of the Montreal Canadiens. I think this isn't the first time I've walked this theory out there, but I really do feel that captaincy changed the whole everything that came after that for the Habs, from the Subban trade, but not just that, the effects of last season and a whole bunch of other things, you know, that tied to his contract. It made things interesting and difficult, and obviously it didn't end well, it sounds like, between the Montreal Canadiens and Max Pacioretty, but he was a prolific goal scorer. He was a lot of fun to cheer for when he was on. It was really something to see. We haven't very often, especially in the whatever 20 years I've been watching the Habs, had a chance to cheer for one of the more deadly goal scorers when he was on than Max Pacioretty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he wasn't Kane or McDavid or Matthews. He wasn't amongst the elite goal scorers in the league, but he was only about half a step below that.
Yeah, exactly.
And his you know, his total numbers, to put up between 30 and 35 every season, there's only, you know, what, 10, 12 guys in the league who can do that, and he was one of them. And it had been forever since we'd had that guy. Oh, and it might be another 5 or 10 years until we get another one.
Yeah, exactly. They're tough to find. Well, for us, they're tough to find. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning or something, you seem to find him quite easily. But for the Habs, they've been tough. Like, even Kovalev, as fun as he was, and he did deliver the 36 or whatever it was that he delivered that year, Patches was a little more dependable, even though he was hot and cold. But, you know, so is every goal scorer.
Yeah, he was, I mean, I liked watching Kovalev a lot more, but he was definitely more consistent than Kovalev was. Camilleri flashed too, but never really to the same level that Pacioretty did. You have to go back to down for us and Stefan Richer to find someone who put up comparable numbers, and that was in a different era. Like, you really have to kind of go back to, like, probably Naslin to find someone who is consistently in the top 10 in goals scored every season the way Thatcher's was.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Thomas Tatar will replace him perfectly.
I have not. How's old Patches doing in Vegas? I really haven't been paying that close attention, actually.
Me neither. Let's find out. It's time for How's Patches Doing in Las Vegas? We should have some, like, Viva Las Vegas music or something going here. Would you mind just vamping a little?
We do not have the production standard.
Yeah, no. It required me to do something after we record this. Something extra. I don't have that in me. Max Pacioretty. So far with the Vegas Golden Knights, through 5 games, he has a goal and 0 assists.
Okay.
That's fine.
Like you said, I don't think he's done, but he is cutting off his worst season.
Yeah.
And he'll be turning 30 this year, I believe. It's not inconceivable that, you know, his best days are behind him.
No, but I mean, so yeah, if he's 30 this year from 28, 27, 26, 25. From the age 25 season on, he went 39 goals, 37 goals, 30 goals, 35 goals, and then last year 17. Yeah. But really, 33 as well in there in 2011, 2012 season. It's been pretty prolific.
Yeah, I think he'll probably get back to that 25 goal, 30 goal level this year, but, you know, to cite another former Hab, if he kind of goes the Thomas Vanek route and descends real quick, it wouldn't completely shock me, because he really didn't look good last year.
No, he wasn't present last season, that's for sure. I don't know, maybe
no,
that changes.
No, he was fighting it last year. It wasn't one of those things where he just shooting percentage was lower than it should have been, and he wasn't getting the bounces. Like, he looked bad last year.
He did look bad, and this is a guy.
But there was a whole, obviously we know now there's a whole lot of stuff that was going on.
Yeah, he wanted out.
Off the ice and in the dressing room, which presumably won't be the case in Vegas.
No, he's locked in Vegas. So, I still don't understand why he didn't want to sign. I mean, I guess taxes, but fuck, that's a weird, like, he got more offered, I believe, from the Kings. That's so strange to me that he was like, no to the LA Kings, but yes to the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I really want to find out what happened. We've gotten quite a few details about that deal that fell through, but that is bizarre to me as well. I don't really understand that.
I mean, if it's just, you know, if it really is just the finger thing, then okay.
Finger thing means the taxes. Yeah.
It does. Thank you for explaining that. But I mean, if that's the whole deal, like, I don't know. That's weird. That's weird that would be the only thing making you choose. Or, you know, on the other hand, the Vegas Golden Knights were in the Stanley Cup final last year. Maybe he believes more in what they did than we do. Because I don't. And the hockey world doesn't seem to again, which is kind of funny, especially if they make us eat it again this year. But
they did have a nice little offseason, though.
They did, yeah. Didn't add Eric Karlsson.
To go add Stastny and Pacioretty a year after making it to the Cup final is pretty impressive.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like they were sold something last year that they all bought into and believed in. And not to mention, it's a copycat league, so I have a feeling a lot more teams, the Montreal Canadiens is an example amongst them, are using that thought of, you earn the ice time, everybody, you're going to just be out there because you're playing well, and we're going to play fast. Everybody's going to lean into what Vegas kind of did last year, and maybe out Vegas them, simply because, you know, if you do that with more talent, odds are you'll have more success.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this before, but I think they caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
I don't think they moneyballed this thing. I think they kind of just got lucky. I'd be surprised if they were able to replicate it, and to a certain extent, I'd be surprised if other teams in the league are able to replicate it as well. I really kind of think it was just a fluke more than anything else.
And I still hold a little bit there was the Vegas factor involved. Especially when you look at their home road splits, like, when these teams were going to Vegas, it was like the Montreal Canadiens in the 70s a little bit.
Yeah.
I really think that had to be a factor. And I think their home run splits indicates it was. Do you worry that Max Pacioretty, our college man, is going to go out of his gourd in Vegas?
I think if you can, you know, Vegas is on a whole different level from Montreal, but If you can keep your nose clean, both literally and figuratively, in Montreal, I think you can probably do it anywhere.
Yeah, and Max Pacioretty strikes me as a boring man.
There were never a whole lot of stories about Pacioretty being out on Crescent Street at 3:30 in the morning.
No, I think that was part of why his captaincy was a little meh. You never got a lot of fire or passion out of Max. Sometimes you got a pout or a sad face, but that's about it. That's all he showed.
Yeah.
Luckily, the captain they have moved on to is Mr. Emotion. Nothing but just a fountain of feelings from the, I don't know, is he, what number? I should have known that. Some number captain in the history of the Montreal Canadiens.
We really did our research for this one.
I wrote down all the media names to draft. That's about the extent I'm going to go.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, it made all the sense in the world. If he's not going anywhere, of course, it's going to be Shea Weber. It's not going to be Brendan Gallagher as much as I'd like it to be, because Brendan Gallagher has a bad reputation with the referees. Yeah. You just can't. It's not going to work.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I like, you know, as a fan, I kind of like Brendan Gallagher more than Shea Weber, but if Sidney Crosby was hurt in the next Olympics, there's a universe where Shea Weber is the captain of Team Canada.
Yeah.
The respect that he has around the league is almost second to none.
No, there's exactly. See, I have no
30th captain of the Montreal Canadiens, by the way.
Yeah, I looked that up. Go with your instincts, kids. I knew it was 30th, but then I thought, maybe I heard that about some other captain of some other team.
I think he was a logical choice. I think he's going to do well in the role. I think he's going to do much better, frankly, than Pacioretty did. The only problem I have with it is that it signals to me that he's not going anywhere for a couple seasons.
I don't need that to signal that to me. Just the way the people at the top of the organization, namely Mark Bergevin, talk about Shea Weber, it doesn't sound like he's going to be moved anyways. I mean, and if Mark Bergevin no longer is in his position, then I don't think the C being on Shea Weber's chest makes him less movable for a new GM than if it wasn't there. The contract's the issue.
Yeah,
who cares about
point.
The C? Like, come on.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I just, the Habs still have to kind of decide what they're doing.
They have decided what they're
we're
doing.
Well, have they though? I mean, we're all in on this rebuild thing, but are you really rebuilding if you still have Carey Price and Shea Weber on the books?
Well, that's the question, but I don't think you can say that they haven't decided what they're doing. They've decided to try and restructure, replenish, while maintaining Carey Price and Shea Weber, and somehow trying to turn that into winning. I remain skeptical.
That is a very tough thing to do.
I know. I'm very skeptical that it can be achieved. That's why I've continued to advocate that you should trade one or both of those guys, probably both, and do it right. But the way Jeff Molson talks about it and the way Mark Bergevin talks about it, doesn't sound like they're that interested in doing it. I mean, why? Look around the league. What example can you think of, maybe just down the 401, that would be a good example of why you should burn it entirely down? I don't know. Site one. Show your work.
I mean, maybe they can do it. Some teams have done it, and you know, they got Kotkaniemi, which is nice, and they got some other young guys. Like the prospect pool is deeper than it has been in a long time. So maybe they pull this off, but it's you're not making it an easy on yourself. I really do worry they're going to end up like, you know, the Canucks or the Flames. There's a couple teams around the league that have tried to simultaneously rebuild and be a playoff team, and it's really hard to do.
Here's the weird spot they're in. So they've bought themselves realistically two or three seasons before real results are expected, right?
Yeah.
But let's say it doesn't quite work out, that the prospect that you just put forward is what actually happens, where, you know, by doing the half measures, you don't really solve anything. Now, maybe it's not quite half measures. Maybe it is entirely a rebuild, except for the fact that they won't move Weber and Price, and at no point are they going to try and get anybody to contribute to the now, rather than thinking for the future, which is probably what's going to happen. But so let's say Price is on his game. Let's say Shea Weber's healthy and does still play well a few more seasons. That probably pushes you to that middle of the pack every year. I don't know if you can do it by finishing somewhere between 10th and 8th every season. making the playoffs here and there. Like, and then you've got a potential playoff team. The trade deadline comes along. Are you not going to maybe shop somebody if that's what puts you over? You know, if you, it's been a couple seasons since the Canadiens have been in the playoffs, do you not maybe try and push it? I don't know. It just, it all depends on how much they're willing to stick to a plan. That, and those are long contracts. So just as these guys, I just see, you know, you push it down the field. So the guys that we got coming up who are going to need a payday four or five seasons down the line, neither Price or Weber is off the books at that point. That puts you in a tough position.
I know.
It's, and you're at the end of those guys. It, now, the Maple Leafs found ways around contracts that seemed untradeable. Maybe the Habs will too. It, it's a long ways to kind of project
that
league,
I mean,
that changes.
There's another lockout coming in 3 or 4 years. So.
Yeah, a lot could change. And I'm sure there'll be some more opportunities to buy themselves out of problematic contracts. The owners seem to like to build more and more of those chances into every CBA that they come up with, but it, those are still two big contracts that also don't, they're two contracts that you're not pushing into the middle of the table to bring back a bigger pool of prospects to choose from. You're sacrificing both in the future, probably for your full potential, and in the now in terms of bringing more prospects into your team.
And as you mentioned, one of the biggest criticisms of Bergevin's tenure is that he does not stick to a plan. Like, think of how many different directions this team has gone in the last 4 years.
Oh, yeah, I know, wildly.
And I think everyone's kind of on board with this quasi-rebuild that they're doing right now.
Yeah, more or less.
After the disaster that was last season. But you're right. What if, you know, let's say, let's this year I find it hard to believe, but let's say next year Price is back to being Price and the team's second or third in the Atlantic, you know, even if it's fooled gold, like you said, how does that team not start going in and trying to win in the now? Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but then you're kind of back to square one because you're not rebuilding if you're trading assets to make a run.
And, you know, there's been, I mean, there's been really bad teams in the last 25 years. There's been some decent teams. There's been two Eastern Conference Finals appearances, though neither of them even threatened to look like the Habs are going to get in the Stanley Cup Final. And as we were reminded earlier this week, as the Kings opened up the Bell Center, it's been 25 years since they've won a cup. And really, outside of the three, four seasons ago where they had potential, we all admitted they were still a piece or two away, but there was, they felt like they were on the cusp of potential. That's been about it. And the rest has been either real bad or that middling that I'm worried we're headed towards again.
Yeah.
You can get, it's easy for a decade to go by of middling and you not really realize it or put yourself in a position to get out of it. So we'll see. But on the positive side, Kotkaniemi's looked great.
Yep. He has looked fantastic. I thought the pick was a bit of, I mean, this comes with the huge caveat that I know fucking nothing about junior hockey. I thought the pick was a bit of a reach, and I think that was the general consensus is that they used the number three pick on a guy that was seen as maybe the sixth or seventh best player in the draft. For a kid his age to be doing what he's doing just straight out of the gun is very impressive.
Yeah, and I've been warning this a bunch on the recency bias, but I do think there's some likelihood that there'll be something of a regression. We've seen it a lot when players hit either their 10th, 12th, or 20th game at this level. But he's 18, and he hasn't looked a bit out of step, really, not to my eye anyway, in the NHL yet.
It's his hockey IQ that I find very impressive.
Yeah, it's great. Yep.
For someone that age to just play as intelligently as he does is kind of remarkable.
No, he definitely seems like a center. The question is, what is his ceiling? But he will be a Canadian center of the future. But you got to like think of, I've been thinking about it this way, and it's easy to project him against Saku Koivu as they're both Finns. And but like, let's say he has a Saku Koivu career. That's a really goddamn good career, and we're happy with it. But as we know from Saku Koivu experience, that doesn't transform you into a transcendent hockey team.
Saku Koivu, in an ideal world, would have been, he's a number two center on a Stanley Cup caliber team.
Yeah, I think so.
Rather than your franchise player for a decade, which is what he was for us.
Yeah, that's, I guess.
And that's not a knock on him. That's a knock on the way the team was built and just their inability to get a center.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible that Kotkaniemi falls into that mold of, you know, very good number two center, which you need. But there's still a big difference between being a very good number two center and being one of those truly elite number one guys.
I'm not saying he couldn't become one of those elite number one guys. Like,
no, it's possible. But if he, like you said, if he turns into Koivu, if he turns into Paul Stastny, if he turns into David Krejci, that's awesome. But it's, you're still missing that guy on the top line.
It's supposed to be the positive part. I don't know what happened there at the end.
My worry with him was that they were going to rush him into the lineup to try and justify the pick.
Yeah.
Kind of like they did with Galchenyuk, kind of like they did with Eller. But he looks like he belongs. That doesn't look like the case.
No, I think there's no way he goes back to Finland this season. I still wouldn't be surprised if he wound up playing much of the season in the AHL or wherever it is that his 18-year-old Ash should play. I don't know how it works. He probably wouldn't. I don't know how it works. He'd be somewhere. My point is in North America versus going back over to Europe. Like, I think they'll keep him close.
Yeah.
He's at least right on the edge of the end. Well, what he's shown through the first three games is he's completely NHL ready, but he's at least on the verge of it at just 18. On the other hand, I hear in my head saying the same thing about the amazing Alex Galchenyuk at 19, 20, 21 years old, where I was like, and he's only 20. And now he's only in Arizona.
What have you thought of Domi so far? Speaking of Galchenyuk,
he's been good. He looks like a center. Like, I thought Max Domi's been probably the best Habs player through the first three games.
Yeah, no, he's been good too.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
The only guy who's been a massive disappointment through three games has been Drouin.
Yeah, holy, that's gonna come to a boil quickly, I think.
Yeah.
Because also, like, when you're doing our projections of if we're really rebuilding, like you say, Bergevin's plans change, because obviously we weren't in the sort of rebuild, except for Weber Price, when you trade Sergachev for Drouin. Now, Drouin's not old, and he's still one of the players that we're trying to develop, but he's still older than Sergachev, and Sergachev's ceiling, I think, is... You texted me the other day, Drouin's kind of stats through three seasons in the NHL, with the nod to starting to be what he might be. And I really agree with you on that. I think we're starting to see exactly what Drouin is going to be, which is probably 15 to 25 every year, maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 points, but that's not enough. I'm worried about him.
Yeah, I think we know who he is at this point. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's premature to say, but he's 23, which isn't old, but for the most part, if it's going to happen, it's already happened by that age.
At least more flash.
And he's not a bad player.
I mean, he hasn't been good this year.
He's super fun to watch. And like you said, he'll put up 50 points every season. You know, maybe 60. And he might even have the odd stretch like he did for that playoff run with Tampa, where he looks like a world beater. But he's not an elite player. He's not even close to that. He's a nice piece who's fun to watch, who's probably a bit overpaid.
Yeah. Ugh. Not how you want the Sergachev trade to end. You want more than that from somebody who looks like he could be the next Andre Markov or something.
Yeah.
But the blue line's not completely empty. I do like Victor Mete. I do like Noah Juulsen. I think there's at least good pieces there, but there's no world... Mete or Juulsen's not going to turn into a world beater. And I worry about Shea Weber just staying... I think when Shea Weber's on the ice, even in a high-paced league, he's still very valuable. But when he's not on the ice, has been often the case now, as somebody who plays such a physical game, his body seems to be breaking down in as he ages. If he doesn't stay on the ice, he's eating up all that time. You're still missing that Sergachev game breaker, I think. Whereas it's not so hard to acquire a mediocre winger.
That is true. Yeah, that wasn't a great trade. The moves Bergevin made, not the summer that just passed, but last year, will be forever baffling and set the franchise back arguably even more than the Subban trade did.
Yeah, it could be. That could.
I think he kind of hit all the right notes this summer, but man, last summer was rough.
This summer, I've got no complaints. Like, if we're grading on the what have you done for me very lately,
I think Bergevin has been on the right path. I think he's done the right things, and I think there's even been a transparency from the organization overall, Jeff Molson and Marc Bergevin. We've just seen more interviews, more in-depth interviews, where they were willing to be asked tougher questions as of late. I've enjoyed the summer experience of the Habs this year more than previous. The arrogance seems gone, which, I mean, thank God. It's hard to be as bad.
How could it not be?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people who fail time and time again remain very cocky.
Fair point.
It's strange how much ego can feed into somebody's inability to see how much they suck. But there's a humility, at least, and something of a transparency. At least they're talking to us about, oh, here's our thinking. More than, you idiots don't know shit. We're not talking to you. Just watch us, dummies. Which was definitely the attitude, I thought, the last couple of years. And then they had to eat it. So the humble pie, I'm happy with at the moment, at the very least. I mean, that's asking not much.
Yeah, no, I the last 6 months have been good. I don't have any complaints of what's happened basically since trade deadline last year on.
No, I don't think so. All right, you want to draft some media? Is there anything else we want to talk about?
I think that mostly covers it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's only been 3 games. They look all right.
And it's a slow burn team. Like, there's not going to be any giant revelations. You know, had Kotkaniemi come out of the gate the way Austin Matthews has started this season, then maybe we spend some more time on that. But I mean, he's got 1 point through 3 games, and he's looked good. He's 18, so that's the extent of it. The other new guys, I haven't really noticed. Tatar?
No, neither have I.
I haven't seen Tatar yet. Armia's been good. Riley's been good, actually. Maybe they're worth a second or two, but I've talked about that on the recency bias. So if you've got nothing strong to say about Joel Armia, we can move on.
let's move on.
All right. So here's the list of who we will be drafting from. And as I said earlier, it's basically, from my point of view, the individuals who are forming the majority of the conversation around the Canadians through various media, be it online, on the radio, or in the newspaper. And some people, I think their influence is probably minimal these days, but they're still they still get enough of a box to be standing on, be it the Montreal Gazette or otherwise, that I thought they were worthy of inclusion. Now, maybe I've left somebody out. I don't know. I hope not. And I apologize if I did. But to me, this seems like it's pretty much the full list. Let me know if I've missed anyone that you grabbed, Sean, as well. You ready?
Ready.
Good. I like that. Are you standing? Are you sitting? What are you wearing?
I am sort of half sitting, half lying down.
That's, yeah, that's your move. I know that move. It's disturbing, ladies. And gentlemen. It's disturbing for everybody.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Inclusive.
Absolutely.
Inclusive. About disturbing.
An equal opportunity disturber.
Yeah. Sorry, what are you wearing? I got excited about the lie down.
Pretty comfortable jeans. Not real comfortable jeans.
No, fuck those guys. We gave them a couple seasons.
Now
I'm all in on trying to get one of the weed companies to sponsor us.
There's a much better chance of that happening.
I know. They got money to spare. My money to spare. All right.
You can say that now. In 3 days.
Yeah. Luckily, almost no one listens to this podcast, so we're fine. all right. Here's the list. Oh, and also none of the Rabbit Habs community, obviously. We'd be biased towards that. So.
No, conflict of interest.
Yeah, exactly. This podcast is nothing if not a bastion of integrity. Mitch Melnyk, Andrew Berkshire, Marc-Antoine Godin, Sean Campbell, Mitch Gallo, Sean Starr, Connor McKenna, Brian Wild, Olivier Bouchard, Sean Gordon, Arpin Basu, Mike Boone, Pat Hickey, Scott Malta, Grant McCagg, Eric Engels, Mark Dumont, John Liu, Stu Cowan, Abe Hefter, and I should have mentioned as well, this is the English-speaking media. We went all English. Marc-Antoine Godin, I know, and Mark Dumont, they can go both ways, but yeah, this is generally in the English Twitter world and conversation around that. You start getting into French and it's just too long of a list, so I had to make some cuts. We decided the language lines, always a safe bet to cut down language lines in Quebec. You can never get yourself in any trouble doing that. One thing I noticed putting that list together, Sean, is there's no women on it.
Yep, that's fair enough.
And
I think things are getting better in that direction, but there's obviously a lot of room for improvement.
And
I don't know if Montreal is any better or any worse than any other market. And I know the Athletic's taken a ton of heat for that. Some of it deserved, some of it, I think, a little over the top. But, yeah, I mean, there's the list is the list, and I think those would kind of be the consensus, 20 or so names to follow when it comes to English media, but it would be nice if it was a bit more diverse.
Now, last time we did this, there were actually more women on the list, but I was just kind of doing a quick thought, they've all gone on to somewhere else to work outside of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
You got Heather Engel, who now is off working in Buffalo. Robin Flynn, who's mainly making her hockey thoughts about the WHMA be known, as she works for the Canadiens. The Emna Achour just left the Athletic. I'm not sure for what. And Amanda Stein went to the New Jersey Devils. So there's been sort of a recent exit of the last 18 months or so. But it's still probably less than ideal that there's about 20 names on that list and none of them are women. Or maybe it's our massive blind spot and somehow we're just not listening at all to somebody very obvious. But I tried to do my best to go through everybody I thought was informing.
There's not a whole lot of Habs, vital Habs content out there that at least isn't on our radar.
There is more, we'll get through the list, but there is more vital Habs content than, I like what's out there. Credit to the people who are on this list.
Yep.
I think a lot of good stuff is being produced. So, anyway.
Yeah, that was going to be my first point was that, so we're doing this, like you said, Saturday afternoon, or there is currently a debate raging on Twitter over the use of the word flu as opposed to virus to describe how Carey Price was feeling this morning. Twitter is such a cesspool that it's easy to forget how much good stuff there is out there.
Yeah.
I forget it sometimes just because Habs Twitter is so incredibly infuriating. But there's, in every sport, for every team, there's never been a better time to be a fan in terms of getting, smart, interesting, innovative, analytically oriented stuff. Mm-hmm. Sports coverage has never been better. You have to go to a lot of different places. Sometimes it's in weird places. The state of the industry as a whole is in a very weird place, but there's never been more good stuff than there is now.
Well, I like to give us a lot of credit for that. I think we really birthed the intelligent conversation era. The Montreal Bias really birthed it. We're like the Velvet Underground or the Pixies of the Habs world. Not a lot of people know who we were, but everyone who ever listened to us went on to start a podcast or something along those lines. Oh, we're still working away down here. Sponsor us, Tweed. Come on. Let's see. I think you went first last time we did this. Didn't look.
I believe I did.
But
yeah,
I believe you did.
Yeah, I think you're up.
I'm gonna go first. First overall, if I could, and then here's to what you just said. As toxic as toxic in the not most common use of it were these days, and it's actually problematic or anything, but it's toxic in the stupid arguments going back and forth on Twitter. It might be wise to just follow the 10 people we end up drafting. You'll probably get the full extent of the conversation and not have too much of the bullshit.
Yeah.
But you obviously, listener, are willing to have some bullshit because you listen to this podcast. All right.
That's the other thing that the other thing we should make abundantly clear is that, we are not in this draft for very obvious reasons.
Yeah, because we would choose ourselves first, rightfully.
Because we would choose ourselves first, and we're fully aware of how ironic it is that we are grading other people on their skills as hockey commentators and analysts.
I disagree. I think our little ivory towers are the perfect spot to be. This one's actually, we tried to fire, some of the last one was just to maybe stir the pot. And we had some, we went through the whole thing and definitely had some negative takes on people. This time we're just doing 10, and everyone that we draft, I think we like. So this is a much more positive spin than our last one, which had some less than perfect intentions, I suppose.
no one's going last today.
No,
you're safe, Grant.
Because we're saving that for when we need content later in the season. Actually, you know, speaking of that, oh shit, I did completely forget Tony Marinaro on this list. Oops.
Well, spoiler alert, I don't think he was going to make the top 10.
I know, but he does make the informant conversation list.
Yes.
Even though he will not be drafted. All right, first overall, I think we had him lower on the list last time because he pretty much wasn't covering the Canadians at that point. He was working for the NHL at NHL.com or the French language site, but he's back covering the Canadians full time. Pretty much been my favorite piece or member of the Habs media world since we started doing this podcast. I think in the early days of the MontrealBias.com, he was our first entry into the top shelf, which was our finest picks, almost like what we're doing again here. It's almost like we recycle content and give it new names. Arpin Basu, number one overall. I can't see, if I only had to listen to one person, and I know there's people out there who feel he's biased against Marc Bergevin or yada, 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 but I'm not here to talk to annoying Twitter. I'm here to say Arpin Basu, if I got one guy, I'm going Arpin.
Yeah, no disagreement here. I think he is just fantastically great at his job, and the fact that he gets the amount of heat that he does is, again, just exhibit 7,000 on why Twitter is accessible. But I think he does an absolutely fantastic job.
Yeah, and I think you get full fair coverage if he's the only guy you read. I mean, if you've got your subscription to The Athletic, there's other people on this list. You might as well read them as well. But if for some reason you were asking, one person only, Zach, I don't have a lot of time, but I want to get a decent picture of the Canadians, absolutely Arpin Basu. I wouldn't think for half a second about anyone else on this list, even though there's a lot of great people. And you wouldn't be at a loss if you followed some of the others. But I think just the smartest, most intriguing, incredible interview that him and Marc-Antoine Gonet did the other day with Marc Bergevin, one of a couple, along with Eric Engel's interview of Bergevin, plus a close look. I mean, The Athletic is going to be all over this list. We might as well say that right now. But he's leading that charge. I think I've said enough good things about Arpin going first overall.
I'm going to stick with The Athletic, which isn't a shock. You could argue this is a bit of a reach because he's more of a jack of all trades than he is a purely hockey guy, but I will always have a soft spot for Mitch Melnick, who I think is, different era than Basu. And you can tell he's sort of from a different area of media coverage, but he is also just incredibly good at his job.
Yeah, definitely.
Whatever that job is, and that job's changed a few times, but when it comes to talking or writing about sports, he is very, very good at it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I still had him in my top five, and I think I definitely had him a little lower ranked simply because, like you say, he is a jack of all trades. He's probably a better Expos conversation than he is a Montreal Canadiens conversation. It's because he's a bigger baseball fan than he is a hockey fan. He can do all the sports, but, I mean, he knows his audience. He knows he has to talk about the Habs all the time. And again, it's just mature adult conversation about the Montreal Canadiens. It doesn't dip into stupidity. Now, he doesn't have the same access as to the team. He doesn't break as much down as, say, Arpin would, but his good, bad, and ugly on The Athletic is still fantastic. It's still one of my go-tos. I never don't read it. I agree entirely. Mitch Melnick is especially from the older school. You can't shake him.
Yeah. I mean, he could write. He could write 5,000 words on a cricket match, and I'd probably read it just because that's the quality of coverage that he brings.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the art over the just the pure conversation or the numbers, Melnick's the guy. Like, he's the most natural, or feels the most natural coming from him. I think, you know, if you're going to just sit down and have a drink with a guy and just talk hockey, I probably would still, you know, if that was the draft, I'd probably have him first overall. I still think that's he's great at that part of it, just the communication part of it.
You're up, my friend.
I am up. Back to my big board and my team. We're running around. Going another pick, stepping away from The Athletic for a minute. I thought this guy's really gone from, oh, he's a good follow, to essential. So I'm taking with my second pick, the third overall, I'm taking Eric Engels, who's the last two seasons has changed my perception of him. I think he's probably changed many people's perception of him as he's really stepped up as a game to game, day to day, breaks story sometimes, but goes in depth. I thought the interview that he did with Mark Bergevin for Sportsnet was really great read, right up there.
Yeah, that was a wonderful read.
Had he not been for Sportsnet, I'm sure The Athletic would have scooped him up as well. He's become one of my absolute go-tos, so I'm taking him with my second pick as, I say, third overall, Engels.
Number two pick, this is also going to be controversial. He rubs a lot of people the wrong way. He rubs me the wrong way a lot of the time. But Andrew Berkshire knows what he's talking about.
Yep. Agree completely. And I got to say, he was one of the people that we took shots at last time we did this, whatever it was, 18 months ago. And, you know, his tone has changed. His professionalism has changed. I think he's come a long way as a follow. He doesn't annoy me the way he used to annoy me, because he picked, you know, so often. I think we said this on the podcast before, like, you'd be on side with him, but he was just being a little bit of a jerk about it, and you didn't want to be on side almost. But I've seen significantly less of that. I think there's been a maturation, or just a realization that, okay, if I'm not going to be the blog boy doing this, if I'm going to be a pro about it, I got to change my ways a little. And I don't think you've taken him too high there. I think he's been a key figure in informing specifically the online conversation, which I think flowed into the radio and as well as all the other broadcasts. I think he was a key player in really shoving Montreal into the next generation and in the blog generation. And now that he doesn't bother me as much, I have no problem with him going forth.
Yeah, I'm still a newbie when it comes to stats, and I like them a lot. I haven't bought in 100% the way some people have, but I've bought in 85% of the way, 90% of the way. And the way he writes about analytics, he does it in a way that's a lot more accessible than some of the really deep divey stats guys.
Yeah, definitely.
In other words, I can read what he's writing and I can mostly understand it, where there's some guys where it's just totally over my head.
Yeah.
If you're looking, if you're like me and you like the sport and you like the analytics and you're, decent enough at stats and math, but you're not going to go full bore deep dive Excel spreadsheet down the rabbit hole. He's very good at presenting analytical coverage to the average moron like me.
Yeah, the average morons should just be the name.
also a good title.
Yeah, maybe we just drop the Montreal bias and just call it the average morons. It would let us talk about it a lot more, though. Like, what percentage of podcasts should probably just be titled that?
85.
Yeah, minimum 85.
Yeah, 95.
All right. More picks from the average morons here. My third overall. Jeez, as long as I haven't broken my phone. So he came from this Andrew Berkshire website, the School of Analytics, meets talking about him a little. I think I would have still taken him ahead of Berkshire just because Dumont is now at The Athletic and really doing more Canadians coverage than Berkshire is at this point. So I'm going to take, Mark Dumont with my third pick. I've got all my three that I had at the 1, 2, 3, as I had them listed, I now have. So feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, he was going to be next on my list. He's fantastic as well.
You're up with your third.
And also does the, like you said, does the analytical stuff in a way that's accessible as well.
Yeah.
I am up, eh?
Yeah.
Let's go with the number three pick. I am going to go with... Let's go with John Liu.
John Liu. You're taking John Liu again.
Always.
I love it. John Liu. He's kind of just a classic at this point.
Just a classic stable.
Playing the hits. John Liu, TSN.
Again, for a guy who has his, has the pulse of the team and the front office and the beat and everything that's going on with the team, if you only had to follow a couple guys in terms of breaking news, he would be my guy. He doesn't do sort of the analytics stuff. He doesn't really do even like deep breakdowns of the games and the team, but he's, he knows what's going on and he has a lot of access and he distributes that information in a way that's fun and easy and informative and very professional.
He's kind of the only pure reporter on this list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You don't get opinion from John Liu. You get the facts and some interviews. All right, on to my...
Which is nice. It's almost a dying... it's almost a dying art form.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So I'm going to take my fourth pick, going back to the Athletic. Man, the Athletic. This might as well. They should sponsor us or hire us, you dicks. We work for free, obviously. We're the only suckers still being told exposure would be good for us. Yeah, I'm going to take Marc-Antoine Godin. I know he almost sort of borderline breaks the rule of going into the French, but I think he does do enough writing that appears in English on The Athletic. Plus, he's got that podcast with Arpan Basu that they do back and forth. So I think Godin is still too much in the spotlight to say that he doesn't have an influence on the English side, so I'm going to take him. He's awesome as well. I mean, he's right up there with Basu.
With my next pick, I am going to go with, let's go with Brian Wilde, who,
there you go.
There was a while there where it didn't look like he was going to be on this list anymore. It looked like he was riding off into the sunset, but Global went and snatched him up, and he's back on the beat. Listen, I have gone back and forth with him on Twitter a couple times. I talked about how Berkshire rubbed some people the wrong way. Brian Wilde can rub some people the wrong way as well, myself included. But he's in, you know, he's sort of in that John Liu mold of, he delves a bit more into sort of opinion, but again, has his faults on the team and the city and the league, and is a very good reporter, and then mixes that in with some analysis as well. A lot of which I don't happen to agree with, but at least he does his homework.
Yeah, no, I like Brian. Wilde went much higher last time, and I got to say, the recruits McCagg associated era definitely hurt his standing in probably a lot of people's minds. But you know, he's on Global now. I still enjoy his game recaps. I think that he brings a lot of observations to the table that maybe other people aren't bringing to the table. His angle on the game is always relatively unique. Still a great follow in game, still a great follow for his opinions and thoughts, no matter where you land on him. I think he's generally relatively fair. Overall. So, yeah, Brian Wilde was definitely going to be soon picked on my list as well. Oh, look, Sean, it's 4:20, and yet we have nothing. If only someone would supply us things. All right, what do you got?
I just told you.
Is it me? Maybe I don't need anything. I forgot you picked him. I was so enthusiastic about it. All right, you took Berkshire. I'm just all about the Athletic here. I'm going to go with Olivier Bouchard. I like what he's bringing to the table. He's very new to me. The Athletic was essentially where I got my introduction to him. But, I mean, anybody who's pumping stuff out that's pretty decent, relatively good every time and pretty informative on a daily basis, like the Athletic is from pretty much all their writers, I have to consider them central because they're the articles that are going to be reading. They're the ones who are going to be shaping the rest of the thought about it. So, yeah, I'm going Bouchard there.
I'm going to go, this is just, who are your favorite Athletic writers? Next on my list is Sean Gordon.
Me too. Also had him.
new arrival. Again, a guy I barely knew who he was until maybe a year ago or 2 years ago. Was at the Globe, I believe, before the Athletic?
I think so, yeah.
But just, again, a very, very good follow, a very good writer, and just the sheer amount of talent that, I mean, it's all we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes, the sheer amount of talent that they've been able to amass at that website in a relatively short period of time is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, well, they said, and a lot of people were very upset about it, basically they were going to bleed the newspapers dry. And we see that they're, not just the newspapers, the website, like, they're going for everybody. They want to be, well, I think they've become the new Sports Illustrated. Now, we'll see how much of a footprint they make on the entire landscape when all's said and done. The NFL, NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball, you got to conquer all those. You got to conquer all the cities. But man, are they on their way. They continue to just hire every time. It's become a meme. It's become a joke why I'm joining The Athletic.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about this before, and it makes sense. There was a rationale behind this, but it is very interesting that hockey was at the forefront of this. Like, The Athletic, for everything else that they've done, for all the markets they're in, for all the sports they're doing, this was, at its roots, a hockey project before it was anything else, which is kind of fascinating.
No, it's something. I mean, they identified that I think people are, I've got a subscription. I know you've got a subscription. And I recommend anyone who's a sports fan, get a subscription. It's good, intelligent. Pierre LeBrun's there. Like, they know what the hell they're doing, certainly in who they recruit. And I think the way they talk about sports right now, it's been a nice sort, you know, it and the Ringer together have, for me, filled the hole that Grantland had made, plus fill the hole that, you know, newspapers used to provide with your daily columns and except probably more intelligent conversation than we ever saw in the Montreal Gazette.
Yeah, I really hope it works. Even setting aside just how much I like their writing and how much I like what they're doing, like, listen, I enjoyed the era of free shit as much as everyone else did, but it's going to have to come to an end. It's just, we've all kind of come to the realization that that wasn't a tenable model for anybody.
No.
I'm okay. I'm fine. I mean, it doesn't cost an arm and a leg, and I'm fine paying for good content, and the content on there is fantastic. And I really hope this works.
It seems like it is, but I don't, you know, who knows what the hell their overhead is. And any of these web startups like this, like, is Amazon's barely in the black today. Like, you spend and hope it works out some way, somehow. I don't think anyone really understands it, to be honest, but The Athletic is certainly trying the Amazon model of let's just buy up everybody, all the real estate, and hope that forces people to come pay for us, Netflix style.
Yep.
Well, I mean, if you just go by influence, at least on us, it's massive. Looking at, because that's our 10 right there. You've got, we'll just recap them quickly. Number 10 was Sean Gordon from The Athletic. Number 9 was Olivier Bouchard from The Athletic. Number 8 was Brian Wild, who, had he not jumped on recruits so quickly, might have wound up at The Athletic. 7, Marc-Antoine Gonet, The Athletic. 6, Marc Dumont, The Athletic. 5, John Liu, TSN. Andrew Berkshire, not The Athletic either. Eric Engels, not. That's a couple Sportsnet guys. And then the top again, number 2, Mitch Melnick, The Athletic, plus Radio, and Arpen Basu. Obviously,
Sportsnet's done a good job, too, eh?
Sportsnet's good, yeah. What you don't see, I mean, CBC doesn't have anybody dedicated, I guess, to the Canadians that cracked the list. But yeah, Sportsnet's got a couple people on there. They've done a decent job of their coverage, too, which is surprises me because I never liked Sportsnet. Just out of some, you know, for some reason you choose one over the other. I've always been the TSN guy over the Sportsnet guy, but good coverage is good coverage. I'm not going to go there just because of some weird connection to TSN because it came first.
Brand loyalty that you established when you were 13.
Yeah, exactly. I can be swayed. There it is. That's the list. Isn't it great?
Yeah. And I mean, moral of the story, like I said at the beginning, there's never been more good stuff out there.
As long as you have a subscription to The Athletic.
Twitter is exhausting.
Yep. Yeah, no, just follow those people.
But if you want to be a smart, informed fan, there's no excuse not to be.
Ooh, but the want, man. The want.
I mean, some people don't want it, right? Some people just want to crack open a beer and watch the game.
Oh, that's fine,
too. Cheer for their favorite team, and that's fine, too. But that's not what I want to do when I watch sports. I kind of want to nerd out on it. And if you want to nerd out on it, there's never been a better time to be a sports fan.
But I don't have any problem with the I just want to watch, I don't need to think too much crowd. It's me, the middle crowd, who want to be involved in it 24/7 in the conversation, but don't want to. But ignorance is bliss for them.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know. Fuck, cheer how you want. I don't care. But leave me alone with it. It's annoying. That's my opinion. Which, I mean, is easy enough. Just unfollow. That's all I got to do. You know, you can unfollow. You don't need to engage with. You can sit over here on our little corner and just pick and choose who you want to engage with. That is the beauty of it. But the problem with the internet is it makes it very hard to not want to creep over and see what the people you disagree entirely with are. But that's our own issue. Deal with it. You're worse than me. You have plenty of hate follows. I've done good.
I know. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I don't know why I do it.
Like, I've done a pretty decent job of weeding out everybody I don't want to hear from. And just because I follow you doesn't mean I haven't muted you. Why am I being such a patronizing dick to our listeners? I can claim I'm listening to all of them. All 6 of you. I still follow you. All right. Anything else before... Well, we already know how the game between the Penguins and Canadiens ends, as we heard on the recency bias before this. But
yeah, what a game.
It was a game on Saturday night at 7:30 from the Bell Center.
I tell you, there's nothing like a Saturday night game.
I do love a Saturday night game. I did miss it because I was very bitter about watching the Habs at the end of the last year. But I have enjoyed it this like through the first three games of this season.
I mean, there is nothing better as a sports fan than October.
Oh God, I know. There's a baseball game on right now.
It's ridiculous. It's incredible. So I'm going to be watching a bit of a game. I'm going to be watching a lot of the ALCS. But yeah, man, it's fun.
It is. Enjoy the Saturday night game, however it is that it ended. And we'll do another one of these at some point when we draft the worst people to follow on Habs Twitter. All right. Speaking of the worst people to follow on Habs Twitter, he's at the O'Neill Factor. I'm at Zach Drops Tweets. This podcast is at the Montreal Bias, of course, at Rabid Habs for all your Rabid Habs interests. That's where you'd find the real top 10 of who should have been drafted. Let me tell you. But again, despite our name, we don't want to appear to be biased. Where would you have put yourself if you had to pick?
Second.
See, I feel like that's that wine thing where you're not supposed to, if you pick the second least expensive wine on the wine list, you're actually getting the worst because they know people like myself don't want to pick the cheapest one, so you go one up. But that's a whole thing that they've got going. So I wouldn't have done that because I think people would have seen that. I would have gone something like fourth for me, like real humble. And then people would be like, oh, he should put himself higher. You know what I mean? That would have been my approach to it. Some other people. We'll just draft. It'll be a two-draft your favorite Montreal Bias podcast host. It'll be a two-man draft by us. Speaking of great podcasts, though, that we would have drafted higher, but for, as the mentioned reasons, we didn't want to, check out the Nosebleeds podcast, now part of the Rabid Habs Podcast Network, which is this one, the Morning After Mini Pod, and the Nosebleeds podcast with Ian Boisvert, Kristen Hines, and Trevor Agnew. I hope I said Trevor's last name right. I hate it when people get... practically no one can say my last name correctly, even my close friends. So, anyways, listen to Nosebleeds Podcast. They produce content on the reg. Any last words?
No. As always, no. I don't have any last words.
Good stuff. Thanks, everybody. See you. See you down there. See you. Keep on trucking.